Fashion.
Turn to the left.
Fashion.
Turn to the right.
Fashion.
Fashion.
You're listening to Fashion on 95BFM with Penelope Noir.
Morena, Penny.
Morena, how are you?
Good, how are you this morning?
I'm good, thanks.
Awesome. I'm excited to chat knitting.
Yes.
We were just having a chat off air. Millie's quite an avid knitter.
Yes, I love knitting.
You like knitting. I'm a bit of a sad excuse for a lady and the thing that I'm useless at knitting.
Maybe it's not your jam though, because I can't crochet. I've tried really hard. Who can crochet?
That's another level.
Crochet. Yeah, I can't crochet.
I can't figure it out. There's only one stick.
It's too bloody fiddly.
The two sticks is where I feel comfortable.
Yeah.
And we're talking kind of prescription knitting patterns that were kind of around during wartime, etc. Super fascinating. They were kind of just told to knit exactly what they were given.
So basically, it kind of has been going on in other wars, like the American Civil War and things like that. But during World War One, there was a massive volunteer drive for knitting, which produced over 22 million wool garments. And these were things like socks and sweaters and balaclavas and wrist cuffs and mittens and things like that to keep people warm, and especially like the socks were to fight the trench foot. And initially, everyone was taking up the knitting. The American, and people were, they were doing it in school, like in New Zealand, school kids did it. Lady Annette Leverpool, who was the wife of New Zealand's governor, called on women to make comforts for the troops. And this was it was a mass drive. It was operating at a central, provincial, and district level. By the end of World War One, there were 900 women's organisations had mobilised to make garments and gifts for the troops. And people would like go and knit at church and knit at social events, and so it was just this massive kind of like knitting chaos. Initially, people were just knitting whatever. And I'm thinking of like things like fluoro pink and stuff like that, but I don't think that was happening. The American Red Cross kind of ended up providing a standardized pattern and specific approved uniform yarn colors to ensure that garments were like fit for purpose. This was so chaotic that non-knitters were encouraged to purchase wool for knitters as well. But it created a demand, like a wool shortage, and pushed the price of wool up. So in some areas of New Zealand, and I imagine other countries, women began spinning their own wool, which is, and they were even knitting cotton bandages that were 15 to 20 feet long for medical supplies, stump covers for amputees, ear covering helmets for radio operators. And it really boosted morale. It was pretty massive. Some of the things that I like, also Queen Elizabeth II and Eleanor Roosevelt in World War II were knitting. There was a no-heel sock craze because of the difficulty of knitting a heel into a sock. Lots of people just knitted tubes.
Yeah, I like that.
Soldiers kind of quite like that, but the sheer scale of the effort could be incredibly crazy. Like there's a report of 800 workers in New York City knitting 7,000 garments in just 6 weeks for the Navy.
Whoa.
And women or some knitters would send cheeky notes to soldiers, just kind of give them a bit of morale, and this led to kind of people becoming pen pals and things like that. The other interesting thing about knitting during the wars is that women resistant fighters and spies use knitting as covert kind of tool to transmit intelligence. Like they use, they knitted Morse code into garments using
serial combination,
like in dots as dots and dashes, and using drop stitching and knots. So
That's cool.
The Belgian resistance tracked German troop trains, encoding data into sweaters, jumpers using bubble stitches or holes to represent specific trains going past.
Wow.
And according to UK Pearson's magazine in 1918, Germans were knitting whole jumpers to send messages, and authorities would unravel and find the thread dotted with knots and just different kind of markers so that you could work out what the code was, but it would be whole alphabets and stuff like that.
That is crazy.
Yeah, it's like quite a rabbit hole to go down, and there's quite a number of people that did different things, like hiding their knitting needles and shoelaces and stuff like that, and just doing kind of really brave things to help, you know, which is pretty incredible.
That's real sweet, eh? That you can kind of take something that could just be a handicraft and turn it into something so much more. Grandma and I used to knit little jumpers for babies who didn't have enough money for warm clothes.
Aww.
And we did it in,
awesome.
You did it in like one pattern, so you kind of like, it was, you didn't have to make like sides or anything, it was just kind of like a big tubey thing that you could like join up. But I know, we used to sit together, and like there's something just so wholesome about like knitting for a cause.
Yeah And I imagine, like, you know, the morale of doing that together when your loved one was overseas fighting must have been incredible, you know, like just having that support with each other, because it must have been incredibly scary.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, totally. Wow. Yeah.
Sisterhood strikes again.
Yeah. On a side note, if you are a big fan of knitting and a big fan of reality shows, there is a show called Game of Wool where contestants have knit-offs to win a prize, like a bit like the Great British Bake Off, but it's set in Scotland. And I don't know if I've mentioned this before, but it's pretty funny. Like, they do kind of like, you know, when they're doing a change of scene, they'll kind of cut to the field where there'll be a whole lot of sheep and one ball of wool. And there's a an English, I think he's a gold medalist.
Yes.
Who is a big fan of knitting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, and I remember when he won the gold medal, and then but everyone was just talking about how he was like knitting on the benches of the pool while he was waiting to go on.
And he and the two judges wear the most incredibly like unusual knitted garments on the show. And each week, the best contestant wins a little woolly sheep badge.
Oh, that's so sweet.
I like this. I'm looking at this Guardian article about it, and the title is, the quote is, "One contestant makes wool vulvas." Tom Daly on his new knitting show.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Oh my gosh. Oh, the power of knitting, though, to bring you all together. And also, like, if you are a little bit, you know, handicrafts oriented, it's a lovely thing to do to just, like, relax.
Yeah. It's, I think it's really good for if you're someone, like, I'm a fidgeter, so yes. If I want to watch something on, you know, like a film or something, it's easier for me to concentrate on the film if I'm knitting.
Yes, me too.
Yeah, because otherwise I just get really sidetracked really easily.
Yes, I do. Yeah. Next thing you're unpacking the dishwasher and you don't know what's happened.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, I feel inspired to get better at knitting.
Yes, I'll teach you.
Yeah, thanks, Millie.
Well, we are coming into winter too, so it's kind of like the right time to start like making some scarves and maybe some mittens. Mittens are pretty cool.
Yeah, I don't know if I trust myself. I think it would probably end up a bit holey and
that's
so good for the first attempts.
It's the glory of a first attempt, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
and you can just consider it air-conditioned.
Yeah.
It's got a hole.
Ventilation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Breathable.
I actually kept the first jumper I made. It was shocking. It went in and out and in and out. Made for like a wiggly person or something. Well,
wonderful.
Thank you so much, Penny. And we'll touch base next Thursday, eh?
Thank you so much.
Have a good week. Ka kite.
Bye.
That was Fashion on 95BFM with Penelope Noir.
We are the Goon Squad and we're coming to town. Beep, beep.
Beep, beep.